It's Las Vegas all.
Pardon?
It's Las Vegas all. He's playing it through the left hand.
For the record, we'll move on to the last. That case we've taken under advisement. We'll move on to what is scheduled for the last case, although we moved the other one last, is to this will be David Kindred versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, and we'll again hear from Mr. Jones.
Gentlemen, we also have a statute of limitations issue in Kindred, but it is not the same as the statute of limitations issue in Bradley. The issue in Kindred involved a default assessment in which the taxpayer did not petition the tax court, and an assessment was made by the IRS when the taxpayer failed to file a petition. This case...
You have notice?
Yes, we do not dispute the issue of whether he had notice. As a matter of fact, Dr. Kindred and his wife were in the same tax protester issue mode at that time, which was before I was retained.
So they didn't show up.
They did not file a petition in the tax court, either through counsel or pro se.
Okay.
In Kindred, at the collection due process hearing, and by the way, the taxpayers have paid the tax in Kindred.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they have paid the tax in Kindred.
They have or they did at that time?
They did not at that time.
Okay.
They have paid the tax. Now, the issue then was whether they could, this appeal was already in process, whether they should continue with this appeal or go to file a refund suit over exactly the same issue.
Okay. Because my question is, this moot?
No. The issue, because we reserved the right when we settled the payment of the tax, either to bring a collection, bring a refund suit, were to continue with the appeal.
Okay,
I guess that's all right. In the tax court, the difference in this issue in Bradley is there was no tax court decision, and it's the taxpayer's position that the taxpayer discovered in the papers submitted by the government in the 4340 that the government had not, in fact, made the assessment within the 3-year statutory period and submitted that issue to the tax court, which basically ignored that issue, which is an original assessment statute, not an assessment following a court decision.
When they submit this to the tax court, obviously it's after the, whatever you want to call it,
default. After the collection due process hearing.
Okay.
The hearing officer refused to consider this issue of liability, and I want to speak to this for just 1 second. In the hearing, the CDPH hearing, normally we concede and we agree the taxpayer cannot challenge the underlying liability. But the code provides the taxpayer can make an offer in compromise. It's statutorily in the code. And I do have the cite to that.
I know that's in there. But that doesn't refer to what you said before.
So the,
you're finding things in the other one that you're not on here.
In this case, the taxpayer attempted to make an offer in compromise in the collection due process hearing, but they were rebuffed by the collection due process hearing officer who made the ruling that although it doesn't appear in the language of the code, if the offer and compromise is based on any doubt as to liability, and we submit that doubt as to liability is a procedural doubt as to liability, not a substantive underlying tax doubt as to liability, then they have a right to have that considered, that offer and compromise, based on a doubt as to liability. The IRS has three prongs to an offer and compromise. One is doubt as to collectability. One is doubt as to liability. And one is effective tax administration, in which the taxpayer admits that he could pay the tax. That's not applicable here, but says that there are extraordinary circumstances under which he shouldn't have to.
Well, is that, which one are you under?
Doubt as to liability.
Because of the timing. You say the statute ran.
Because of the timing on the statute. And the tax court, the hearing officer and the tax court refused to consider that issue. So we're, one, again, back to a threshold question of whether the procedure can be considered in under the collection due process statute with respect to all taxpayers. And that's the main issue in the Kindred case, and the only issue in the Kindred case, because they attempted to submit an offer and compromise based on debtors to liability.
Okay, so your case, they didn't go to tax court in the notice and were defaulted. Subsequently, got new counsel, discovered that the tax court waited too long, or whoever, the IRS waited too long, that the statute had run on the collection of that assessment, and you raised that issue at the CDP hearing, and they
threw an offer and compromise.
They wouldn't let you.
And they would not let us.
And your issue is you think they had to, or whatever.
Yes, I think that that's an abuse of discretion. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Ketchum.
Okay, first I would like to respond to Mr. Jones's remark that Congress intended to give taxpayers a second bite at the apple. We submit that Congress clearly did not intend that, because they conditioned raising the issue of the existence or amount of the liability to cases where the person did not receive any statutory notice of deficiency for such tax liability or did not otherwise have an opportunity to dispute such tax liability. So it's only where this is the first bite of the apple that the taxpayer can do this. So it's only in a tax court proceeding. It's only where, for example, the IRS sent the taxpayer the notice of deficiency, but the taxpayer had moved without sending the IRS's address. He didn't get it in time to file a petition or something like that.
Is this one of those, exceptional cases where they could have initiated a case in federal court with the partial payment and then challenged the
No, this is limitations? This is an income tax case.
I know. Could they have challenged... First of all, they didn't show up at the tax hearing.
Right. Okay. So the only prepayment option in an income tax case is the tax court proceeding.
I know. Well, prepayment is in tax court?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was in federal court.
No, the prepayment is in tax court.
Prepay partial and sue to get it back?
No.
Isn't that federal court?
That's some kinds of taxes like the... responsible person penalty for employment taxes, that you can pay part of it and get it back. But for income taxes, This is where the IRS has determined that the taxpayer owed more than he reported on his return.
Oh, okay.
So that's a deficiency proceeding. The IRS can't assess it, and the assessment is a precondition for collection. can't assess it until sending a notice of deficiency and giving the taxpayer an opportunity to respond.
That only opportunity then is in tax court, and he says that y'all did it too late.
Okay.
And tried to raise that in the CDP hearing.
Actually, they did not raise that in the CDP hearing.
What'd they do?
They did in Bradley, but in this case, they did not raise any statute of limitations issue in the CDP proceeding. They sort of said that they wanted to do an offering compromise based on doubt as to liability, but they didn't have their records, and they didn't know when they'd get the records, and they couldn't commit to any deadlines, and basically they didn't get one in within the time allotted.
Could they have? I mean, would that have been an appropriate forum to raise the fact that, the allegation that the tax court filed the assessment too late?
The IRS did the assessment.
IRS, I'm sorry.
No, because that is, again, I think it's clear from the language of the statute that Congress intended to exclude also things like notice of deficiency, because it says the existence or amount of the deficiency of the liability. So if it had just said the amount of the liability, then it would be arguable that maybe the existence of the liability, such as a challenge through to statute of limitations, would be appropriate. But Congress said the existence or amount, and that means, I submit, that Congress intended this to cover statute of limitations issues. And I might also point out that traditionally also statute of limitations issues can't be raised in suits for quiet title under Section 28 U.S.C. 2410, because in those in tax cases, because those cases challenging a tax lien, because in those cases the taxpayer is restricted to procedural arguments, and so in those cases, in that particular line of cases, there are cases that say that you can't raise statute of limitations because that goes to the amount of the merits of the liability.
Okay.
So they didn't raise it. And also their argument, they did not present any evidence whatsoever. I mean, this is merely speculation. I mean, he says this number, means something.
They weren't ready to do it, I guess.
They didn't. And even in the tax court, they didn't present any evidence. And they didn't ask the tax court for additional time to respond to the motion for summary judgment. And also, the only one that he says that there is a discrepancy about is assessment of the interest. But the interest does not have to be assessed within the statute of limitations. Interest continues to accrue until the tax is either paid or the statute of limitations on collection has run out.
Is that right? So the only disputed time issue is on interest, as opposed to the
principal
assessment.
That's the one that they're pointing to, is the entry about interest.
And
that doesn't have to be. And besides that, there isn't any basis for there, because the 4340, Certificate of Assessments and Payments, under assessment date, has December 6th. And taxpayers here do not dispute that would be within the statute of limitations. Their argument is based on an assertion that date is incorrect. And again, the case law that's developed under other areas of the law is that forms 4340 are presumptive proof unless you can show some irregularity. So there are cases, for example, Hoff, in which there was no assessment date, and so the court held that can't be proof of a valid assessment because there was no assessment date. And the case that I believe Mr. Jones was the litigant, that was a case in which the summary record of assessment, there was some question about whether or not it included, it was about employment taxes and not income taxes, and there was a question about whether it included any employment taxes. So it has to be something, but here the 4340 has an assessment date. and it's clearly within the statute of limitations. And so this, you know, this number, you know, means that it was actually posted later. Well, again, there's no requirement that the IRS enter it into the computer. I mean, an assessment is defined by statute. The date of assessment is the date that the assessment officer signs the summary record of assessment that includes this particular liability. And that's the time. It's not the time it's entered into the computer system. It's not the time that it's determined before that. It's only when that happens. And so it might be entered into the computer.
That happened meaning what's that?
That is the assessment officer signs the summary record of assessment. So that's the definition under 6203, that's when the assessment happens. So it's sort of the assessment is a particular bookkeeping entry. And it's not just any time the IRS determines that the taxpayer has a liability. It's a specific action.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else, Mr. Jones?
Yes, if I may, Your
Honor. You've got 3 minutes.
I don't think it'll take you that long.
Good.
Gentlemen, first of all, the reason it wasn't their records that the taxpayer didn't have, it was records in the possession of the IRS that the taxpayer didn't have for purposes of the collection due process hearing. And the request for a delay was a request to allow the taxpayer under the Freedom of Information Act to be able to access IRS records. And the hearing officer would not let them do that. And those IRS records included their master files and what would have been the equivalent of a 4340 to see whether the assessment was made on time. The abuse of discretion there was in failure to give them time to review the records and then submit a collection alternative, which they're clearly entitled to do. Second, the assessment of interest. I want to go through this real quick. The assessment of interest occurs on the same day by computer as the assessment of the underlying tax. It is automatic.
Well, that's of that date, isn't it?
Excuse me?
As of the date of assessment.
As of the date of assessment.
Of delinquent tax.
And that assessment can't be made willy-nilly at any time, as suggested by counsel. That assessment cannot be made until after the accounting entry establishing liability is entered into the master computer. So therefore, if the records were made available to us, our argument was and is that we would be able to discern the issue of the statute of limitations correctly, because there is an entry on the 4340 that indicates that the interest assessed, and it's under the same document locator number as the tax assessed, supposedly on the same date. And that entry indicates that the assessment was not made until after the 51st week of that year, not December the 6th. On the Julian calendar, it works out to December the 30th and would have been time barred. All we asked for was the right to see the documents, which we were denied. And then we were denied that at the tax court level after being denied that at the collection due process hearing level. Miss Victoria Osborne, by the way, does not work for me. She is a forensic accountant who is independent and works all over the country analyzing accounting records and IRS records. That issue was, I mean, that question just came
name
up parenthetically. And in this case, the law requires under 6330C1 that the appeals officer obtain verification that the requirements of any applicable law or administrative procedures have been met.
Okay.
That includes the statute of limitations, Your Honor.
All right, thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement. We're going to proceed to what was originally scheduled as the fourth case of the day.